We're about to get started here, Paul. Can you do me a favor and go scrape Super Eka off the ceiling?
If I can catch him, he's been running around the light fixtures for about 45 minutes now. He's been throwing cheese shreds and bits of meat on us all afternoon. It's unbelievable. But
well, it's Taco Tuesday.
I mean, yeah, is Taco Tuesday really a good idea? I mean, I know Super Eka is the sweetest little monkey in the world. But, ow! God, he winged me in the eye with a piece of diced tomato.
I'm sorry.
I mean, he's worse than Rashi when he gets like this. Have you seen him? He's been guzzling horchata so much it's been coming out his nose.
Well, he's just excited. Just give him one and he'll come down.
I know. Okay. Well, Super Eka, come on down now. Come on down now, son. Oh, man. Salsa right in the eye. It really stinks.
Ha ha! Taco Tuesday, followed only by Gassy Wednesday, where Super Eka's eaten so many tacos, he puts English on every word he spins.
Yeah, you're right.
Rashi, I don't think we really want to start this podcast with a fart joke.
Ha ha! Mom, I think we just did.
Welcome to Taco Tuesday at the Dini House.
Hi, I'm Paul Dini.
And I'm Misty Lee.
And we're happy you could join us while we're mopping up the guacamole. we have Taco Tuesday like once a month, and Super Eka just goes...
Berserker.
Yeah, or you should excuse the expression bananas.
No, boo, yeah, I will not excuse that. Let's go back to Berserker and pretend bananas didn't happen.
I think it's like he starts early and just drinks the horchata and goes bananas, berserk, or he just gets goofed on horchata. And you know what's in horchata?
That's milk, isn't it?
Well, it's rice milk.
Rice drink. Yeah.
Rice milk and cinnamon?
Yeah.
It's good.
Oh, it's
and lemon. Rice milk, cinnamon.
No, not lime. There's a squeeze of
there
lime
is?
In there. Yeah, there's a squeeze of lime in it. You think it would curdle the
yeah.
milk, but it doesn't.
It's very
I actually
sweet.
Am not sure it is milk. I think it's just a rice
yeah.
drink, and that's
oh,
what
so
looks
good.
Milky.
What's that, Super Eka?
Yeah, see.
He's kind of coming out of it.
Yeah.
Super Eka, what actually is in horchata?
Horchata is made of wind. I love it.
Okay, we need to cut that child off.
Okay, all right. He's Charlie Sheening on the horchata here.
Oh,
we've got to
no.
get him.
You can go back to bananas if you stay off
he's
Charlie
the
Sheen.
F-18 of horchata over there.
Even during naps, I understand.
Yes. Okay, he passed out. So,
yes, so
he passed
fine.
Out in his little cup of flan over there. So, I mean, you know, it's strange. He's Mexican, and yet Rashi apparently is not. They're brothers.
Mm-hmm. Well, and neither one of us is sock monkey.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Explain that.
I don't know. I buy it.
I just thought my family was complicated to explain.
There you go.
Oh man, I got some lurkers in my family that. Let's not even go there. You know, lurkers, haunters in the dark. Innsmouth.
What does that even mean?
Citizens of Innsmouth.
Lurkers, Nosferatu.
Nosferatu, yeah.
It's like, what does that mean? You know, like you turn off the light and all of a sudden there's Aunt Gertrude? Like,
yeah.
What is that?
They just start
I don't know.
Skittering like cockroaches.
Yeah, they all just come in, eat your pizza, and choo, they are gone when you turn the light back on.
I don't know if there's any other way to describe some of my family members. I mean, I think every family has a few.
Every family
lurkers.
Has weird, you know, black sheep, but unfortunately, you and I are the black sheep of our own families.
Yeah.
I mean, like, we're it.
Yeah.
So I don't know what you mean by lurkers.
I don't know. Lurkers are probably guys who show up on Sunday, you know, for brunch with flowers. And we're here to take you out, Mom. You know, just upright.
They're looking for Nell. They're not looking for Deanies.
Yes.
That was Dudley and a half right
Snipely,
there.
Snipely, you villain. I love Dudley Do-Right.
Yeah, I know you do. Great. You do him very well.
No, you know, it's like actually one of the few times I actually tried to do an animation voice. It wasn't Dudley Do-Right, but a few years back, they were having auditions at Warner Brothers to do Marvin the Martian.
Oh, nice.
And I've done his voice. Everybody does Marvin the Martian, you know? It's like...
Emily does a good Marvin.
Oh, yeah? Yeah, let's hear it.
Why isn't she on mic today? Oh, here it comes. Oh, she's bright red.
You're going to make me do it now?
Yeah, we are.
Yeah.
You make me very angry.
Very good. Very good.
Yeah. That's good.
Oh, those earth creatures, they make me so angry. You know, it's like, you can do that, but I found out, like, when we actually, when I had to say more than that, this was for, like, It was an attraction in Germany or something like that for a theme park.
Did you have to speak in German?
No, they wanted an English track of it also.
Oh, I see.
And it was one of those things where it was just real casual around the studio type thing. You know, who does a good Marvin? Because I didn't think they wanted to pay anybody. And it was just a scratch track. And, you know, also it's a chance to get your foot in the door if you wanted to,
sure.
ambitions to do it later. I think I said hambitions, which is sort of like...
Wah, wah.
Yeah.
Go on.
Ham it up. I found out the voice is kind of hard to do because everybody does the... you know, you made me very angry, like the lines that Mel would do from the cartoons. But I found out when his lines are more complicated than that, like when we gave him more to say in Duck Dodgers, you're not listening to, Mel didn't set the tone with that. So suddenly it would be like, now, Dodgers, you've got to take the ball and run down the infield, and Snidely has escaped from jail, Commissioner. I'm after him. You know, suddenly mm-hmm. it turns into Dudley Do-Right really easy.
Right.
So when you've got somebody like, Joe Alasky or Bob Bergen or somebody who can do the voice really well, mm-hmm. that's when you appreciate it. So when I auditioned for Marvin, suddenly he was turning into Dudley. And
so
really
when you did Duck Dodgers, who did Marvin for you?
That was Joe.
It was Joe. So Joe did both Daffy and Marvin?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, talking to himself all through every
Indeed.
Episode. Yeah.
Did he switch back and forth, or did he do different takes?
He would switch back and forth. He's that good.
Yeah.
He's terrific.
God bless him.
Yeah.
And, we had dinner with Bob Bergen earlier. I mean, you know, we were just talking about Joe Alasky, but we had dinner with the wonderful and fabulous Porky Pig playing Bob Bergen.
Bob Bergen, who does a flawless Porky Pig.
Yes. Yeah. Fortunately, neither one of us do. but Bob, we're going to try to get on one of these podcasts.
Oh,
yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, he said he would do it.
Cool.
You know,
so did Jason, but we haven't done that yet.
Yeah. Jason Marsden. Well, yeah. We should actually turn this into more of a vehicle for animation and, you know, for voiceover and magic. You know, bring in more guests.
Some of our awesome friends.
Yeah.
So if you guys have anybody that you really want to see, let us know.
Yeah.
You know, we've got people that we love to talk to, like Jason and Bob, and we'll bring them in. But, you know, like, it would be nice if we could start lining up guests and just have a third chair or, you know, however it is.
Yeah, that'd be
great.
Ezra,
we'll talk about this after.
Yeah, that's something that we've put out before is, like, you know, questions or twestions, but maybe we could put out, you know, guest ideas, you know, people that we've worked with in animation or film or TV or stuff like that. Because we do know a fair, you know, amount of people, and we can also have people call in or go on the road or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
So any requests, please email radiorashi@gmail.com.
Yeah.
Yeah. Can they leave a message there? Or they?
Yeah, that's our email account. We can make another one later.
Oh, all right.
That's the one we're using right now.
Great.
Or you can reach us on Twitter or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah, or you've got Paul's Twitter, guys.
Yes,
yeah.
Paul's Twitter as well.
Yeah. Oh, and answering this week's question, still don't have an answer on Tower Prep, guys, but, you know, we hope to have one soon. And, you know, just your patience and your admiration for the show is so much more appreciated than I can say here. And hopefully I will be able to say how much I appreciate it very soon. So.
Yeah.
But anyway, back to Bob Bergen. You know, actually, it's funny, we were watching...
Who is an excellent voiceover teacher as well, might I add. He was my first voiceover teacher.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
He was the very first one I saw Bob Bergen for animation. Mm-hmm. Then I studied with Richard Horvitz, who was Invader Zim.
Oh,
yeah.
Yeah, and he's
great.
Brilliant,
he
too.
He did some good stuff on the Psychonauts game by Tim Schafer.
And Billy and Mandy.
And yes.
He's also Billy and Mandy. Busy dude. Awesome guy.
Yeah.
Can't recommend these two highly enough. And Greg Berger, who is Odie on Garfield, was my animation... They were my animation teachers.
And Charlie Adler.
How could I forget Charlie?
The amazing and outrageous Charlie Adler.
Heart your pantyhose and shit on the floor, Charlie Adler. That was his big direction.
I worked with
him.
Get
in there and part your pantyhose. And I still don't know what that means, but he's a hell of a director.
Yeah.
And then did commercial with Nancy and Bill. Nancy Wolfson and Bill Holmes.
Yeah.
Both really, really good. And boy, I like those guys.
Mm-hmm.
VoiceOver is so full of nice people. They are so amazing. I'm so lucky. But since we're talking about, you know, Bob, I figured I'd give him a nice plug.
Sure.
You know, if you're looking for, and he travels all over the country. He's actually doing one, an animation workshop coming up in St. Louis here. So if you're in St. Louis and listening and you want to study voiceover, Bob Bergen is heading your way, hometown.
Also, he's done one-man shows here and there where he talks about doing voiceover. I think the theme is how a nice Jewish boy grew up to become Porky Pig.
Oh, how funny.
It's like, Mom, I'm going to grow up and become Trafe.
I'll bring home the bacon, but I won't eat it.
Yes, good boy. Good boy. You know, it's funny, like, we were watching the Academy Awards and the King's speech was...
You mean the awkwards.
Oh, yeah. Well, the content of the awards aside, you know, the King's speech, which we saw and we really liked, began racking up the awards, and we just had dinner with Bob Bergen the night or two before, and I was thinking, That would be a great parody, The Pig's Speech.
Mm-hmm.
And it would be, and you could also set it in the same time because in the, well, it would be like a few years later, but in the early 40s, Porky Pig was often, you know, called upon to do like, you know, like the Bugs Bunny Bond rally and, mm-hmm. and cartoons like mm-hmm. that. So it's like where he had to give a line, you know, like, you know, Bugs is singing about buying bonds and everything. And maybe Porky's going to record his one little line in there and he has to see the same speech therapist. And it's mm-hmm. like.
That's really funny.
Yeah, that would be hilarious.
Like you hear him going, hearing dropping F-bombs every place. Fudge, 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 fudge. I said it. Cartoon characters aren't allowed to swear, are they? Even though I'm not over there anymore, I know pretty much what they've got in going. I don't think they're doing the little segments, but that's something we could bring Bob in and have him do, is just do a parody of that. Because in the Bugs Bunny Bond rally, Porky does have only one line, you know. It's like, you know, here comes the freedom man. He goes, can't make tomorrow's plan. And then he sings the song with Bugs and just have them, you know, have him going through all this. You know, he's got to deliver that one line and it's really important because he's got to sell bonds and everything. Every once in a while, they give Porky a serious role. There was also another one called, oh God, I'm going to get the title wrong. Where's Jerry Beck? It's not Miss Glory or Old Glory. Oh, it is. I think it's called Old Glory. It's about the, it's about American history. And Porky has to stay the Pledge of Allegiance without stammering. Oh, and that's what you do it to. He's like, you know, he has to get through that cartoon without stammering through the Pledge of Allegiance. That would be the one you do it to. That's a really weird cartoon. Chuck Jones directed it. And because it actually deals with American history, Porky looks like this weird mutant pig baby. And they actually put pants on him and they give him this weird shadowing. So he looks like a small, wide-eyed child. And then Uncle Sam, as the spirit of America, appears to him.
Yeah, he's like very doe-eyed and shiny looking.
Yes, yeah. And he's got big red lips, you know. And it's what? Like, and every time... It's like Porky Pig is going, goddamn Pledge of Allegiance. You know, I don't want to say Pledge of Allegiance, like Pledge of Allegiance, and he can't get through it without stuttering. So he throws the book aside, and he has this dream where Uncle Sam appears to him, and Uncle Sam looks like one of my gay aunts. You know, he's very red lips, but he's got a little beard, and he comes forward, and every time
aunt had a little beard. Yeah. Okay, you know what? I'm not going to judge.
Sometimes she did. And then,
all right.
But every time
he had an aunt that looked like an orangutan, by the way.
Well, that wasn't
the
same one.
Did we mention that? Because she fell down a manhole.
Yeah, he heard the manhole.
Yeah. She still haunts.
She's my favorite.
She still haunts the sewers of San Francisco.
New York has alligators. San Francisco has Aunt Esther.
But I just, yeah.
God.
But right. I love that cartoon.
So
every
Uncle
time,
Sam has red lips and a beard.
Every time Uncle Sam moves, it's like real stiff and it's like, hail to the chief, blah, blah, blah. And he gets really angry. It's like, why learn the Pledge of Allegiance, Porky? Because of freedom! He goes real psycho all the time. Gets real serious. Yep. And it was animated. It was directed by Chuck Jones and he wanted to outdo Disney. So he made everything really serious and important looking. And they just should have had Porky stammer through the Pledge of Allegiance and have done with it. But at the end, he recites it, you know, with a little bit of a hint here and there, but he, you know, it's a message cartoon. They didn't do too many of those, fortunately. Hmm. So, but anyway, it would be fun to, like, do the prelude to that is, like, and shoot it with, you know, intercut animation with Jeffrey Rush, trying to teach him to get through it and everything. So it wasn't one of Porky's more memorable moments. I mean, you know, the character...
That sounds pretty memorable to me.
Well, it's memorable, but it wasn't funny. I mean, you know, Porky is great for getting laughs, like, that cartoon you really like with Daffy, TikTok Tuckered, where they're trying, where they're both, they can't get to sleep at night. And they keep coming in late and the boss, who's like this really, you know, another stiff human, just like screams at him. And that's a funny one. Porky and Wacky Land is great.
That was good.
And we're coming up on St. Patrick's Day. And there's that great one, The Wearin' of the Grin, where he's trapped in a castle with leprechauns.
Yeah. And the leprechauns are dressed up as somebody else. And at the end, they reveal themselves.
Yeah,
right?
yeah. Mm-hmm. They disguise themselves. The leprechauns are disguised as a caretaker, but there's actually two of them, one standing on the other's mm-hmm. shoulders. For a while in the 50s, I guess late 40s and early 50s, Chuck Jones would play Porky as a sort of ignorant, complacent American, you know, tourist.
It sounds like he was also drinking a ton of absinthe.
Whoa, who?
Chuck.
Chuck?
He's got giant creepy Uncle Sam and, You know, two leprechauns dressed up as a caretaker of a...
He might have. I don't know. I think it just sort of like... I think he and Michael Maltese, he worked primarily with Maltese during, you know, the 40s and 50s. And I think they were just a really good team where they brought out the best in each other. They wrote a lot of really...
so creative.
Really, you know, amazing stuff.
Yeah.
And the Porky cartoons where he's like in some he's like a tourist with Sylvester, and Sylvester always sees creepy stuff going on, and Porky always kind of just misses it. But in this one, Sylvester's not in the cartoon, and then about halfway through, Porky realizes, shit, I'm in the haunted castle of the leprechauns, and they think I'm after their gold, and they put him through the ringer. It's like an Irish version of Porky in Wacky Land, because there's a lot of weird Irish imagery in it.
Does Porky ever eat anything in the cartoons? I don't think I've ever seen him eat.
Like what, ham? That would be
That's gross.
Well, I think they actually have had him sit. Well, no, there was a whole cartoon about eating, and it was by, I think it was Art Davis directed it, called Bye Bye Bluebeard, if I'm not mistaken, and I probably am. But it was a cartoon where it opens with him trying to reduce, but he's actually eating in time to a guy on the radio, and he's made a big feast for himself, and there's all sorts of food around, and a mouse wants to, you know, eat some of it, and he chases the mouse away, and then a killer breaks into his house.
What?
Yeah, it's a great animated. It's
yeah,
a sort
by,
of like
by Bluebeard.
Yeah, wolf, lion, Russian villain. He's just like this weird Russian, you know, carnivore villain with a big blue beard, and he's trying to like blow Porky up on a rocket or guillotine him or something like that, and the first the mouse pretends to be Bluebeard in order to scare some food out of Porky, but then the real Bluebeard, of course, shows up, and you know, hilarity ensues. But yeah, they've had him eating, but they don't actually have him sitting down and eating like a swine. You know, he just happens to be a pig. So there is an old cartoon, and I can't remember the name of it, but it is about a pig that just eats obsessively, about a little pig, and then he sort of forced this horrific nightmare of where he's force-fed food, but it really isn't Porky. It's just sort of like a generic porker. I think that's a Tashlin. I'm not sure.
Mm-hmm. The only thing I remember is early on, I think Porky was paired up with a dog or something like that, and there is Beans, and it was Pork and Beans was the original.
Porky and Beans,
yeah.
Pork
and Beans, yeah. That was the original team.
Yeah, they were trying to kind of parody or reference the Little Rascals in a certain way where...
Hello!
Yeah, where they made a little team of them, of like, and they made them like kids, you know, like reciting things in school and everything like that. And they actually had two little Boston Terriers called Ham and X.
What?
Yeah. I don't know if they were specifically Boston Terriers, but they were like little puppies that had, you know, kind of, you know, black and white scheme. And then Porky kind of took off, I guess, because of the stutter and the voice made him kind of appealing. And then for a while they paired him with a goat named Gabby. So it's like you have a guy who can barely talk at all, and then another guy who won't shut up. And so they were paired up for a while. And then Porky became either kind of like a partnered up with Daffy Duck or else just, or, you know, they had an adversarial relationship. But I always thought the Porky-Daffy relationship worked really well.
I love him so much in certain cartoons.
Yeah.
I love him so
you like
much.
You like the screwball... You know,
I just like Nasty Quacks.
Nasty Quacks.
That's what I really, really like.
Yeah, yeah.
No, Nasty Quacks is where Daffy is the pet of this little girl. Uh-huh. Elmira, actually.
Elmira would be like 50 years down the pike, but actually this was sort of like a baby Snooks kind of like parody. Yeah. But he's the little pet. A little duckling, and he grows up to this obnoxious.
I remember that.
Version.
It was the older Daffy,
oh,
was skinnier.
It's
wonderful. And he's got this great.
He's got a flat
head and a little cowlick, and he's like a real mischievous little imp in that one.
He's like a real pest.
Like a sprite in that one, and that's my favorite version of Daffy too.
Oh man,
the one who's just unhinged and can do anything. I think possibly the worst thing they did ever with Daffy was pair him up with Bugs.
Why is that bad? I mean, they're kind of funny as long as they're truly operating as foils and not friends.
Well, they're funny in those three cartoons that Chuck did, the rabbit hunting cartoons.
Yeah.
And there are weird little team-up moments in those cartoons where Daffy ducks down the hole with Bugs and they're saying, you know, look, see if he's gone, you know, and suddenly they're pals in a weird moment.
Sure.
And it's really funny. And then as soon as Bugs, you know, looks like he's going to get away with something, Daffy always rats him out. And I think those are great. But, you know, I think after that time, it became too easy to pinpoint Daffy and say, okay, let's just make him an a-hole and let's make Bugs always superior to him. Mm-hmm. And Daffy is for some reason Bugs's pal, but he's always, you know, going to rat him out or something. Or in some of the later cartoons, they're just, you know, he's just nasty to him for no reason at all. And Daffy's just a really unlikable character. He mm-hmm. just whines and bitches and grumbles, and he's greedy for no reason. And, you know, which are all, you know, part of his character, I guess. But I really like the ones where he's just, nasty quacks. And what's the other one? Porky Pig's Feet, mm-hmm. where they're trapped in the hotel room.
Yes.
They're actually, Bugs is Daffy's pal, you know, because mm-hmm. Daffy calls him up and says, hey, get me out of this. And Bugs can't get out of it either. That's kind of cool. So the more unhinged Daffy is the funniest.
Boy, that cartoon is just so funny.
Where he's, you know.
Well, Nasty Quacks.
Where he's just like, oh, what
a
party.
Well, it's the what a party thing. It's honestly Mel's delivery.
Yeah.
It's so delicious. I'm not even going to try to attempt it because it's just so funny. We were watching this clip today. I posted it on my Facebook of this little tiny baby, and 23 seconds in, this baby, they're just tearing paper, and the baby is laughing and laughing and laughing and laughing and laughing and laughing, laughing. And I started laughing so hard because this little baby, like I said, 23 seconds in, gives this belly laugh, just this real guttural, like, and you can hear what the kid's laugh is going to sound like when it's older. And it reminded me of that because it's just so like body rattling, riddled with laughter, and this kid just can't even control himself, that it reminded me a lot of that scene in Nasty Quacks. And I said to Paul when we were watching it, I said, somebody got a hose and there was no water. You know? And he just started laughing because he knew exactly what I was talking about.
Yeah. Yeah, it really is like the defining Daffy cartoon. That, and there are a couple of other ones Great Piggy Bank Robbery, where he gets knocked out.
Bob Clampett, one of my favorites.
Drafty Daffy, where he's like, he's all full of patriotism, and then he finds out the man from the draft board is coming over, and he just turns into this shrieking psychotic mess. He's running around so fast that his body just turns into lightning streaks and polka dots as he's trying to get away from this little droopy dog type guy who's trying to
induct him into the army.
Yeah.
With his draft card or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's funny.
I haven't seen that one in a while.
Yeah, anything where he's just unhinged and kind of manic. But he's also very, very likable in those cartoons. It's not like the later, like, boy, if you never saw them, don't watch them. Like the cartoons from the 60s where for some reason he's living in Mexico and he's just like beating up on Speedy Gonzalez.
What is that, Ezra?
That's the dad and Daffy Duck and...
That's not it. Ezra's just showing us a random picture of some guy.
Oh, but it is on there. The nasty. Oh yeah,
that's him.
That's it. And the dad.
That's my Daffy.
The dad in that cartoon is perfectly designed. He's like this big chubby star. Almost. He's got like
a starfish.
Like a starfish shape. You know, especially when he's dancing around at the end and he thinks he's gotten rid of Daffy, and that whole duel they have with butter knives as they're going up the stairs and everything.
it's so funny.
It's such good personality animation because when Daffy knocks the knife out of the dad's hands, he kind of looks at it, and dad kind of looks at it, and...
Touché.
Daffy very gallantly allows him to pick it up, and he kicks him in the ass and knocks him downstairs.
Have you ever seen it? You've seen Nasty Quacks? Have you seen Nasty Quacks?
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Okay, because the universe needs to see Nasty Quacks. So if we can find it on YouTube, maybe Ezra will post a YouTube link. It's so funny.
See, I like cartoons where characters are unhinged, and they're neither... You know, they're hard to pinpoint. Are they heroes or villains? And Daffy is kind of both of that because he's like, the little girl loves him, and yet, you know, he's like the bane of the father's existence.
Mm-hmm.
There's a Bugs Bunny cartoon where, I think it's called Buckaroo Bugs, where he is like, he's like a carrot thief in a Western town. And they send out this parody of Red Rider to catch him. And Bugs just kicks the living crap out of him just for the sheer joy of doing it. And, you know, Bugs is ostensibly the villain in the cartoon, but he's just, there's such a sense of delight in mistreating the adversary that you just, you know, you love him for it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, good stuff. I don't like to see cartoon characters get pigeonholed too much by, you know, one thing or another.
Are there any contemporary cartoons that you really, like, you want to talk about that you really think have a lot of merit?
No,
that
they're
kind
all
of
crap.
Have that? Alrighty then.
No.
I'm sure there's some that are out there that are good. I mean, even like Foster's Imaginary Friend has some.
No,
he loves SpongeBob. Okay. We watch Family Guy all the time.
No, I'm being facetious.
And I love Bob's Burgers.
Is that good? I haven't seen that yet.
It's ridiculous.
Really?
He's got this real smart ass of a little kid that wears bunny ears all the time. And so it's just a huge win. She's very like homicidal and she's like 8. And I just love her.
Nice.
I just love her. So I like that show an awful lot.
Yeah. I mean, there's good stuff on all the time. I just I'm good for a few episodes of Family Guy because I think they've got the relationship between Stewie and Brian pretty amusing. So you don't really.
And you like it when they sing.
Yeah,
I
like it's it the road two episodes that are the best.
Yeah. Cleveland, I can't even sit through it. You know,
that show's tough.
It's a spinoff of something. It's almost like I want a spinoff. Let's Cleveland. You know, because they won't let me be dirty with Quagmire, so we'll just. You know, do Cleveland, and it's like, really? The most boring character on your show, and he gets a spinoff, huh?
Yeah.
Okay, well.
Well, Joe is pretty boring.
Yeah, Joe, but Joe has his moments where he goes nuts, so, you know, yeah. I'd watch a Joe show before I'd watch a Cleveland show.
All right.
But Cleveland is just sort of, and you know, and even when they make him, when and I did see the show a few times, even when they try and juice him up and give him more to his personality, you're sort of going like, he had very little to begin with. Why didn't you just create a new show?
Right.
I don't just like perpetuating, you know, a bad idea as it was, sure. Or a dull idea. You know, you might as well. Least American Dad is like a new character, you know, mm-hmm. Like come up with something else. Okay.
When we're talking about original ideas like Invader Zim, fantastically original idea.
Yeah. And you know what? I think that was an idea that was before its time and definitely on the wrong network. That should have been a Fox show.
Oh, yeah.
Know? Occasionally, and I know this well, you know, a network will buy a show for kids and they'll say, and suddenly it'll break with a totally different audience and the network will just go, give it the hook. We don't want it. It's not reaching. It's not what we intended. And it's like, yeah, but it's got a phenomenal audience. It's like, not the audience we want. We're choosing to look at this in another way. So,
yeah.
And with Invader Zim, you know, that had the Simpsons audience. That had the thinking kid audience.
Oh, that's right. You wanted to talk about Puppet School.
Yeah, Puppet School was fun. Actually, you signed us up for Puppet School.
I did. And I do those things.
Yeah.
He's like, what are we doing Saturday? And I'm like, oh, we're going to Puppet School. And
where
he's like,
what?
Where
do you sign up for Puppet School?
At Puppet School.
It's like,
hello.
The National Puppet School.
No, there's no National Puppet School.
Is
but
this?
There is. I will give you the link. And we can actually post it on the website because it was really cool. They did a 2-hour crash course, which was more like a pitch for their other 8-week courses.
Yeah.
But it's like the second city of puppets. You know, like you go and there's like level 1 in building, level 2 in puppet building, level 3 in puppet building. And they talked about the different things that you would accomplish in each course. And then they had puppets for theater and puppets for television. Mm-hmm. Those were two separate tracks that you could take. Improv with puppets.
Right.
And there was another track.
It dawns on me that if we're going to puppet school on Saturday night, we clearly have no lives.
We do have lives because our lives involve going to puppet school.
Well, I guess that's true.
Sounds like better life than most people.
Yeah, I guess.
I mean, that's a pretty cool thing to do on a Saturday night.
Well, we could get stoned or we could go to puppet school.
Or we could have done both. We
I'm
only
sure
did
some
one.
People are.
Yeah. We only did one. Guess which one we did.
I don't know that, marionette.
I've never been stoned
next
in
to
my
me
life.
Was pretty buzzed.
I have never smoked marijuana ever, not even one time.
Yeah. It's, works for some.
So let's talk about Puppet School.
Puppet School.
It was fun.
It was fun, and it was something I probably wanted to devote more time to, but I don't know.
Did you guys get your own puppets, or did you have to supply them? Or?
They had them.
Oh, okay.
They had this little bingo lottery. Like, they would do, like, a quick overview of what each course track was. You know, that's really what it was. Uh-huh. And then they talked a little, and they would give you little tidbits. They're like, oh, you know, if you ever need to carve in foam detail and stuff, use a wood burner. And I'm like, wow, that's really good and interesting to know.
Yeah.
Never would have thought of that, because it's like a pencil. And you mm-hmm. can get a lot of detail carving and stuff in
it. Melts away the foam pre-season.
Yeah,
sure, but it doesn't mar it permanently, and it just takes it little by little. Yeah. You can kind of get, I mean, you have more control that way. And I thought, oh, brilliant. I would have done that with scissors or tried to figure out another way, or I don't know what I would have done.
That's how I did it. When I
just
made
light it on fire and been like, well, there was that.
Years ago when I discovered how Muppets were made, I actually took some, I went to the foam store and I actually cut up foam into big heads and made some puppet characters.
Yeah, but they showed pattern making and things like that. So it was really intriguing, and I have no idea where we were going with that. You'd asked me a question.
Oh, I just wondered what if they supplied you with puppets.
Oh, yeah. That's what I was going to say. They had this little bingo lottery, and so they were talking about each track that the puppet school that you could take there, the different options that you had, and they had this little drum, and you got a number on your name tag when you came in. And they would roll the drum around, and balls, like bingo, would drop out of the drum, and they would say number 15, number 26, number 31, and number 40, you know, come on up. And you got to play with the puppets, and that was how they chose their audience volunteers, which I thought was particularly clever because, you know, there was no awkward moment where they're like, who wants to come up? And everyone's like, no one.
Yeah. I don't want to be the first.
Right, exactly. Yeah. So they just, it broke the ice immediately, which I thought was very smart. But it was a 2-hour presentation and they touched on each of the things. They gave you like a brief overview of what you could learn, mm-hmm. taught you a little bit about it. And then my friend Laura, who teaches the puppet improv there, was kind enough to pimp me.
Yeah.
And grabbed me up out of the audience and handed me a puppet and said, now make up a song.
Well, you know,
Wow. Thank you. Thank you, Laura. Yeah, it was actually very fun.
Well, we do kind of... You're trained, so...
Yeah.
We do kind of know the basics because, you know, I've worked with puppets before and you do...
The Rashi.
You know, do Rashi for...
What?
Oh, we're talking about...
I'm a real boy, you son of a bitch!
Yes, that's right, Rashi. Don't tell him. Don't tell him. He's,
I won't.
He's in for years of therapy if we let him know. Okay. You know... We have done them before, and I studied it in high school and stuff like that. So,
and you're very good with it.
I collect them. I collect a lot of puppets.
Yeah, but they all have different voices. They all have unique personalities. They all have a very unique way that they move, a different cadence, a different mannerisms. You're really, really an excellent actor, and you're a great puppeteer.
Well, thank you. I mean, just after the 2 hours, a lot of the basics came back.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, oh, yeah, I remember this, I remember that, stuff that I hadn't thought about in a long time. But, you know, I'm more of a hobbyist than somebody who's actually going to build a set and go out there with a puppet for any long time. Although I do have that platypus ventriloquist dummy.
Yeah, platypus dummy.
The platypus. And I did work... I was going to do a routine at a comic convention last year, and I did actually write a routine for a talent show, and I just, you know, I kind of got that stage fright feeling.
Well,
like,
you know, you can always do it this year at the same talent show.
Maybe I will. Maybe I will. So maybe I'll bring the platypus along. It's a great
Dragon Con.
At Dragon Con? I don't know if I'll be bringing the platypus to Dragon Con. I might.
Well, we'll see what happens with that, because I don't even know what's going on with the show. And Bugsy just thinks the whole thing's a snore. Boy, he is so loud. You guys, he's like 4.5 feet away from the microphone.
Yeah.
Speaking of 4.5 feet away from the microphone, I had an embarrassing moment today.
Four and a half feet away?
Yes, actually. I was in the booth. We were recording a cartoon. And in the middle of this session, the lead guy, whom I had never met before, who's a pretty well-known actor, whose name I can't say here.
We all signed NDAs, but we can't talk about this till July.
Non-disclosures.
Don't interrupt. I'll say that.
All right.
You know, so whose name I can't mention because we've all signed NDAs, but he's up there giving this really great dramatic read, and it wasn't easy because he had to do a specific affectation to his voice today because it was intrinsic to the plot. And right in the middle of it, my stomach goes, and the casting director clicks on and she goes, can you do that again? I got some tummy noise. And I said, that was actually mine. And I was like 4.5 feet at least away from his microphone. He was in front of the microphone. I was way behind him in the corner of the room, and my stomach interrupted his take. It was so embarrassing.
That's why you need to eat before you go to work.
Hello. And I had a bottle of water there, but it was not enough.
But we got up this morning and we're going to the, you know,
so awesome. I was like, that is impressive. There's going to be like some alien shit going on in here in just about a minute.
I mean, it's like, well, we get up in the morning and, you know, we're going to the same recording studio. We're taking separate cars because I've got, you know, we're going to be leaving at different times.
I almost played a trick on you and took the blue car home today.
Really?
Yeah, I was going to, and I thought, oh, I don't know.
Oh, my car's been stolen.
Yeah. Wah, wah.
It would have been.
By my wife.
Well, then.
We were parked right behind me when I came out, that's why. Anyway.
But, you know, you got up in the morning like a half hour before me and took a shower and got dressed and put on makeup and got all pretty looking
on,
and everything. And I'm slobbing around the house. And I think, oh, I think I'll have me some breakfast. You want some breakfast? No, I got to go to work. I got to get out the door, you know. And me, I'm eating breakfast and maybe thinking about putting on pants and stuff like that.
He's always thinking about putting on pants.
And I cruise in about, you know, like a minute or two. We hadn't really started, but
No, we didn't get started till a little bit late this morning. It was interesting, you know, because like I'm always 10 minutes early to a session at least, because there's usually like union paperwork you have to fill out and you got to sign in and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. And I was sitting there watching like the actors. Like I came in and there were a couple already there, and then a couple were cruising in, and then Captain Backpack walks in halfway through the session. Oh, hey, sorry, I interrupted a take.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, it was kind of fun.
Yeah, you know.
I've never been in the full cast session like
that.
Like, they usually do my stuff because it's just a line or two here and there.
Yeah,
so great. So you guys were all in the
Yeah, we did radio
room.
Show
oh,
style.
Wow.
Yeah.
It was pretty fun.
Yeah, and, you know, so it's just like they do have the little coffee room there, so just get yourself a cracker or something.
Well, or a Nutter Butter.
Nutter Butter.
Because the studio tech was telling me, David is his name.
Yeah.
And he was saying, you know, I got those Nutter Butters in there. And I said, can I have one? And he said, they're there for you.
Yeah.
So, yeah, now I can go in and have a kookie.
Yeah,
yeah. Because I was on time. I came in and dropped my phone on one guy and dumped water on the other one. And I said, boy, that was... And then my stomach growled in front of the third guy and ruined his take. Right. And on the way out, I picked up my water bottle all over the chair. I said, okay.
I cruise in a minute later. Paul, nice to see you.
And
how
he's
are
just
you?
So calm. Because I'm still new, relatively new. So I get kind of... I still get stage fright a little bit when I go to these sessions. And although I do fine when I'm on the microphone and after I've met the actors, whenever you have to perform in front of people that intimately that you don't know... It just makes me a little bit nervous.
Performance
anxiety, if you will.
I'll tell you something. Like, when I would do ADR on Batman or a show like that, because often I would come in and do... And Batman was a show that had a lot of, you know, hoods and thugs and you know, fighting and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So we'd always... In every episode, you know, some villain has a bunch of henchmen, and they're always getting thrown around. And you need to grunt or groan when you get hit or something. And very rarely do you record that beforehand. And I would sit down to do the ADR session. And I got to say, once those beeps start in, there is a feeling of terror in my stomach. Because I do get stage fright. And even though it's just like Andrea Romano would say, okay, you get hit in the face and then you slump down. So it would be like, like that, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And... But I hear the beep, 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 and suddenly, in the back of my head, I'm standing on stage as a little kid going like...
And it's on, yeah.
Oh, God, everybody I know is out there and I have to pee. And you know, you get through it, you power through it, but it's like, it takes me back there. I'm not a natural actor. I do enjoy it.
You're so good
I
at
do
it, though.
Well, I do enjoy it eventually and, you know, and everything like that. But when I was in Jay and Silent Bob, you know, it's sort of like, you know, it's like, and Kevin showed me, you use a clipboard like this, clip like that, you know, and bring the guy over, you know, and the guy who actually does the clipboard did it. And then suddenly, I've seen him do it a million times. Suddenly, I'm like putting around my neck, I'm dropping it. I'm going like, I don't know how to do it. And the guy just holds up one other hand. He goes, look, see, click, and call the scene. And so I'm leaning in like this, you know, suddenly I'm a Muppet and I'm waiting for people to operate my arms. God, I can't believe it. It's 10 years ago. Exactly. We were shooting Jay and Silent Bob. I got to come on the set for a week and
share a trailer with Will Ferrell.
Will Ferrell had the other half of the trailer. Yeah, nice. That was pretty cool.
That was Jay and Silent Bob Strikes Back, right?
Yeah.
The one where he just pretty much had fun and invited all of his friends onto the movie.
I think that was Kevin Smith's version of a Muppet movie.
Yeah, like, yeah. It was just him going, I want to do everything I've ever wanted to do.
Yes. So I'm bringing in everybody I know, everybody I've met through comics, everybody I've met through movies, and people I just like on TV who I've seen here and there, and everybody's getting a role in the movie.
Yeah.
Which was great. It was a party. It was a lot of fun. And there was a monkey. And
a monkey?
There was an orangutan.
We were talking about ordering monkeys through the mail today.
Oh, yeah.
Remember that?
Yeah.
Yeah. You should tell that chameleon story very quickly.
I'll finish up with that. We'll
you should tell it now. It's appropriate now.
Are we done with the movie room? Okay.
Yeah,
all right.
We're done with the movie.
Yeah, but I'll finish up that by every time I had to say something in that movie, it was just like, da, da, da. But I got through it. I'm doing this.
Yeah, here you are. So not telling the chameleon story.
Oh, the chameleon story. Okay. All right. Request for the chameleon story, which I actually wrote up in a column I wrote called 200 Words.
The iFanboy column?
The iFanboy column. Okay. And actually, this one got a good response. This is probably the best received one of them all. So, but I had a friend who, we were talking in the booth today about, you know, when you're a kid, you order through the mail and you can order anything, you know, like a full-size submarine, and then you get it, and it's a cutout of a submarine. Moon monster, it's a picture of a moon monster. Real ghost, and it's a balloon. You know, all this hokey stuff that you order from the back of comic books. For a brief time, you could actually order exotic animals from the back of comic books, like live alligators or monkey in a teacup.
What? If
there's a monkey wearing little overalls, sitting in a teacup, a little squirrel monkey, which must have been a taxidermied monkey, because they won't sit still to be dressed in little overalls and then put in a teacup. But there it is. And apparently if you could scrape together, I don't know, $25-$30, whatever it was at the time, you could get a monkey, and they would ship it to you and arrive in a little crate, the shrieking, you know, starved little thing that, you know, you don't want to raise, but now you're stuck with. I can't imagine that would have been very happy for the monkey, but apparently you could order them at one time. And one of the things I think was a little more accessible for kids were these chameleons. And for $1, you could get a chameleon lizard and, you know, honest to God, chameleon lizard from the jungles of Central America for $1. Mm-hmm. So this friend of mine ordered one from this mail order company. My friend Robbie ordered one from a mail order.
And his brother.
And his brother John, they ordered them from a mail order company. And they saved their money, they put it together, and they got their dollars together and, you know, saved their allowance, and they sent it in. And Robbie, you know, was imagining, man, I'm going to take my chameleon and I'm going to put them, you know, over here, and it'll turn that color and it'll turn blue when I put them on my bedspread, and it'll turn, you know, checkered when I put them on the crayons and everything, you know. Walk down the street with my giant Komodo dragon chameleon on a leash. I was really looking forward to it. And every day he ran out to check the mailbox, you know, went on for weeks and no chameleon. Eventually, like 6 weeks later, you know, a little tiny box shows up and he goes, John, we got it. And so he and John sit down and they're going to open up the box. So they open up the box real carefully, and inside there's a bed of straw, and there's one chameleon kind of looking around real bright-eyed and alert and, you know, all nice and shiny and everything. And there's a second one that's shriveled up and dry and not moving at all. And they look at him for a second, and then John, who's the older brother, says to Robbie, oh, yours is dead.
Oh, my.
Yes!
It just goes to show you what dicks older brothers can be when you've got a few years on them.
And what brilliant rapid-fire thinkers.
Yeah.
Not, I guess we'll have to share it. Yeah. Like, that kid processed the situation, figured out how he could benefit from it, and manipulated his younger brother. God bless that boy!
And assigned him the dead one.
Yes!
As older brothers should do.
Oh, let's talk about your magic trick, shall we?
What? Oh, yeah. That
can magic. We please?
Oh, okay.
We have the cutest picture of Paul and his baby brother, Bruce, which I will show you. We can't scan and put it in because we don't have Bruce's permission, although he's very cute in it. And Bruce is wearing this little sailor suit, and Paul just looks like the picture of the perfect child. He's just sitting there like, I know, you want to take my picture? I can smile for you. I'm a Leo. Check me out. And he's just sitting there, and he's so cute.
Yeah.
So cute. And you look at this little tiny baby boy, and you think, how could Paul have done this to him?
Oh, there's this cartoon. There's this old Fleischer Popeye cartoon I was watching.
Oh, my God.
I must have been the first time I saw it when I was a little kid. I must have been, five. And it's a cartoon where Popeye and Bluto, I think, or Popeye opens a cafe, and Bluto goes over to get himself a free meal or something, and then eats a bunch of food and then won't pay. There's a scene where I think, Bluto does like a magic trick. You know, he takes the bill and rips it up and throws it away. And Popeye says, oh, yeah, and he takes a napkin, and he shows it both sides, and then he puts it over Bluto. He just sponges them hard in both eyes. And I can't remember. It's been a while since I saw the cartoon. It's either Popeye or Bluto. One does it to the other, but very deliberately socks him in the eye. But after showing him both sides of the cloth, and suddenly I think, this is the greatest magic trick I have ever seen. And I go, Bruce! And I get a napkin, and I want to do it on him. So I take a cloth, I show him both sides, I put it over his head, and punch him in the eye. And he screams.
Why did he do that?
It's not quite as funny. It's funny for me for a minute that my mom came and saw what I was doing and kicked the crap out of me.
Oh, I'm going to steal that and do that to my brother, and it's still going to be funny.
Oh, yeah. It's always funny. As long as you just do it very deliberately, show them both sides, and then, boom, ooh.
Yeah. Poor Bruce. He doesn't have very much luck with magic tricks. I did the Amazing Jonathan's magic trick for him where you show an empty hand.
Oh, yeah.
And you cover your hand with a cloth and then you whisk your hand away and your middle finger's there. You know, like you made that appear. I mean, you know, before you whisk the cloth away, you got to very carefully make it look like there's movement underneath, you know, so they're really interested. And then whoosh, you pull the cloth away and your middle finger's there. It's very rude. And Bruce just, like, he was so interested and he was so excited and he was watching. I did it at Christmas and I went whoosh, and I pulled it away and he went, oh, why did you do that? That hurt my feelings.
How did this look like? Why? Why her? Like, why?
And then he just looked at Paul and he was like, neither one of you
there
really
was no one
magic.
Else to marry.
Like, it's not okay. He was, poor Bruce.
You're
magic. We gotta work
so
one up for
insulting.
His wedding.
Oh yeah,
let's
he's getting married.
Trick up for his wedding.
Married next week. We could not appear.
He would be happy about that one.
he is looking forward to us being in his
I'm wedding, looking so. Forward to seeing him.
That'll be fun.
He's a good guy.
That'll be fun.
Yeah. So it's time to wrap this up. So yeah. We can wish Bruce well.
Yeah, because by this time, well, this will probably air when we're at the wedding.
Yeah.
Yeah.
At Stevenson, at the chapel at Stevenson.
Why don't you tell everybody where we are so they can come and find us?
Which is the basis for
Tower
Prep. Why
don't you tell them what you'll be wearing?
Yeah,
exactly. I don't know. What are you going to be wearing?
I'm not going to tell you.
Oh, okay.
No, but yes, you're right. We are going to the campus where Paul went to school, and that is the campus on which he based Tower.
Yeah.
That's fun.
Yeah. That's exciting.
Yeah, so.
Memories.
Yeah.
They have a church there, and we had to go listen to religious speakers every other weekend.
Really? Is it Catholic? Is
it's Episcopalian.
Oh, interesting.
But, you know, occasionally we would always have faith leaders from the community. So we'd have, you know, Muslim leaders and rabbis and, you know, different faiths.
So they educated you in comparative religions that way?
Yeah.
Did they always lecture on something that was close to their own belief system, or did they come in and talk about general things?
Well, they talked about...
What I'm asking, that's not very elegant.
Well, they talked about whatever the faith was, but, you know, we had kids who were Islamic or Jewish or, mm-hmm. you know, Christian going to the school already, or Buddhist.
That's good.
So it's more like half of it is like, for the kids who are of these faiths, here's a holy person from the religion you were brought up in, and for those of you who've never... don't know much about this religion, here, we'll educate you. So it was like,
nice.
You know, you got a little bit of everything for all over.
I wonder if they still do that.
I don't know. It's been a long time.
That's kind of cool.
Yeah. I mean, that's the way to do it. But you can't do that in public schools. You can only do it in a private school.
Right.
Because, you know, the big G is forbidden in public schools.
I was trying really quickly to think of something clever that G could stand for. And
Godzilla.
Yeah, but he's not forbidden in public schools.
I worship him.
He's forbidden in Japanese schools.
Yeah, they don't like him there.
Yeah. No, you don't want Godzilla coming to your school. Or maybe you do. You know, Godzilla visited our school.
Ah, Gojira.
Yeah, we don't have to go back all semester.
Yay! When Gojira comes to the elementary school, all the little girls that are playing outside in the hopscotch field scream like that Santa Claus song
exactly.
I like. They're like,
yeah. Yeah. I would welcome Godzilla to, you know, spreading the faith at any place of worship. You know, if Godzilla existed, people probably would worship him. They probably say.
You know, how can you say Godzilla doesn't exist?
Oh, God. It's like saying, if the Great Pumpkin stops by.
That's right.
Now Godzilla's going to pass
prove
us by.
He doesn't.
And not leave us radioactive presents.
I need tangible proof he doesn't exist.
What are radioactive presents exactly?
Except the skeptic.
Yes. No, but seriously, if Godzilla, you know, I bet there are people who do worship Godzilla. You know,
I'm sure
If he showed up here, people would fall on their faces and say, well, you know, that's a mightier display of power than I've ever seen by going to church every Sunday. So I worship you, mighty God lizard.
Godzilla.
Godzilla. Yeah. And people would still fight, though.
Yeah.
Because people would say, well...
As long as there's one dead...
I worship Mothra. Yeah. And we're the Church of Rodan.
Yeah.
And
yes.
What, no love for Anguirus? Come on over here. King Caesar...
Yeah. Those Gamera Scientologists.
Oh. Gamera's a different studio. Yeah. Oh, then you would have Fatua.
Yeah.
Because it's like the Toei studio versus the other studio. Oh, man. It would be... It just doesn't work.
No.
Religion just doesn't work.
It never has.
Oh, God. Okay.
Right.
We solved it here, though.
Yes. We solved it here on Taco Tuesday, which was the original subject that we started talking
We didn't
about.
Even talk about tacos.
Well, no, we didn't.
No.
Well, there's some things are best left to the imagination. Tacos may be those things. Muggsy certainly agrees.
Yes. Muggsy is dreaming of tacos. All right. Well, thanks for tuning into another one of these.
Thank you.
The weekly ramble.
Yeah, indeed.
Yes. I think we covered it all. Thanks. We'll talk to you next week.
Yep.
And
leave us some reviews on iTunes. Tell your friends. Let everyone know.
Happy tacos.
Night.
So rudely interrupted. It all started with an innocent telephone call. I thought I'd never see home again. What a party. Oh, brother. The chairs were flying around like rockets. Oh, someone clipped Charlie in the ear and that started it all over again. What a party, brother. Some fun.
A toast.